SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You want to join the SEC? Wake up and hang out with Ariel Epstein and Ben Stevens every weekday on Sports Grid.
Happy Monday, Fantasy Sports. Today, here on the air, noon to 2 Eastern, it is NFL training camp week. It is Major League Baseball trade deadline week. And, of course, we have the Olympics going on. So, we also have the NBA draft. So, an exciting week ahead for us here on Sports Grid, right here on Fantasy Sports Today. It is good to see all of you who are watching us and listening as well. I'm Craig Mish, along with Davis Maddock. We got you covered for 2 hours talking fantasy. And, Davis, the news is coming in here in the NFL. You heard Chris's update there. We'll talk about Deshaun Watson quite a bit here on the show. We have trades in Major League Baseball going on. Of course, the NBA draft is coming up this week. So we go from the slow to the fast this week. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, you know, we had about 3 days there where there wasn't really much going on, but we have NFL training camps. We got, teams are reporting. The Major League Baseball trade deadline is going to be coming thick and fast at us. We have the NBA draft coming where we're going to be talking about some prop bets for that. So, you know, it was nice to have that slower week, but basically now is the time for us to take in a big, deep inhale, and we're not going to be able to exhale until about January 15th. So I hope you are ready for that.
Yeah, I am. Sounds about right. Here are our headlines here as we start the show here on this Monday, 26th of July, final July of 2021 on a Monday here on Fantasy Sports Today. We've got Team USA getting shocked yesterday by France. So things not getting off to a good start after a couple of exhibition failures as well. Luka, no effects from him playing in his first ever Olympic game, 48 points, second most in a first Olympic game of all time, as Slovenia beats Argentina. The Major League Baseball trade deadline is coming up on Friday, and the Padres are getting ahead of the game. They acquire all-star Adam Frazier for the Pittsburgh Pirates for a couple of prospects. Today in NFL news, NFL Network reporting that there's a possibility Deshaun Watson gets traded. What a bizarre situation this is, as he reports to camp. And Domingo Germán of the Yankees has a no-hitter through seven. He gets pulled. The Yankees blow a late lead to the Red Sox, and they are on the brink. We'll see what they end up doing this week. So we have plenty to get to here on the show. Baseball, of course, talk. No question about that. But I got to say, in terms of fantasy, this is just a huge story with Deshaun Watson, Davis, because I don't know what to make of it. I'm very tempted to just not take him in any draft. But then if he plays the entire season, I'm going to look back and say, hey, maybe I should have. I don't know. Is there precedent for something like this? It feels like anytime the NFL has an issue with somebody, they just jump into it, get it corrected, and the guy gets suspended. But not this time. It's just so weird.
It is very weird. And I think the fact that he is not suspended right now and the fact that he is not on the commissioner's exempt list is, I mean, that, you know, that is why we are hearing about him potentially being traded, because I believe if a player is on the commissioner's exempt list, they cannot be traded. Now, the Houston Texans, according to reports, depending on, you know, if you believe them or not, are asking for the sun, the moon, the stars, and the ocean for Deshaun Watson. You know, three first round picks, and they want, you know, a young guy back. The thing that we've heard widely reported is that the Philadelphia Eagles are interested in trading for Deshaun Watson. You would imagine that what the Texans are asking for is Jalen Hurts in return, as well as multiple first round picks. I definitely do not think that the Philadelphia Eagles should do that. And but you're right, it is a very weird situation. I mean, it was reported yesterday he was showing up to training camp. I did not expect that. I thought for sure we are not going to see Deshaun Watson at training camp. So just very bizarre stuff overall.
Yeah, and I don't know that we've heard the end of this for sure. We are getting started with our Razz Bowl draft today, and we're going to talk about that throughout the show. Davis has made his first pick in the draft. Brett Levy has made his first pick. I believe I'll be coming up here on the clock. So at the bottom of the hour, we'll take you through it. And each day for the rest of the week, we'll have an update as to my first fantasy football draft of the season. I think it is Brett's. I'm not sure. I know Davis, this is his millionth, but you never know. The millionth could be better than the 10th, that's for sure. Davis, what did you think of the trade yesterday in baseball? The Padres, they won the first two games against Miami. I was at both of those, and then they lost the next two. And they go ahead and they get Adam Frazier from a fantasy perspective. I mean, I would think it only helps him, right? He's going to be in a better lineup. He's probably going to be in the lineup every single day. And from Pittsburgh's perspective, I mean, fading them the rest of the season, I mean, it's almost impossible to do because the lines are minus 250 or 300. But Pittsburgh clearly at this point is playing for what, like 2024 at this point?
Yeah, I don't see exactly where he slots in for them. Right. I thought that, I mean, I think it's a good trade, right? Adam Frazier, a good player. Where do you think he will be playing for them in their lineup, though? Because second base is locked down by Cronenworth, shortstop obviously locked down by Fernando Tatis. Are they wanting to play him at third base as the backup for Machado, you know, kind of having him as their rotational right-sided infielder? Or do you think they want to play him in the outfield?
Yeah, I think that he probably plays 2 days a week in the infield when they give players days off. And I think he probably plays 2 days in the outfield when they do the same thing. The other thing that's in play, Davis, is that Eric Hosmer's had a rough year. And who knows? Like, maybe he plays first base. Maybe he's in a platoon with Hosmer there as well. I don't know the answer, but with all of the injuries that have happened in baseball, I mean, they really didn't give up all that much for him, and Pittsburgh is paying the salary for the rest of the season, too. I think one of the prospects looks like they could potentially be good, but look, the Padres need to win. They lost two games to Miami on the back end Saturday and Sunday, and obviously when they play against these rough teams, they're going to get games against Colorado and Arizona, Davis. They cannot lose those games to those teams, and they can't split, by the way, series as well. All right, we'll take a quick break. Coming up on Thursday night, the NBA draft, Davis and I, along with Brett, are going to take a look at some props. So stay on the grid with us. Also, later this week, we'll hear from Cade Cunningham. And we'll be right back. We're off and running here on this Monday. Hope you stay with us. You're on Fantasy Sports Today. Don't go away.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Going on right now in Tokyo. It's been pretty fun. A lot of the different events to check out if you've seen some of the replays or watched some of it live, no question. A lot of the focus, of course, is going to be on men's basketball. I know I'm checking out baseball as well. But golf, of course, is first and foremost. And Davis, I got to tell you, like, just so strange this weekend to see players testing positive for COVID. And in particular, John Rahm. Like, I thought John Rahm went through this already once. I wasn't really sure. I can't figure out what's going on here. But Bryson DeChambeau, John Rahm, both out due to a COVID test. So what do you make of the rest of the field here as we move forward?
Well, I mean, definitely, I think John Rahm being out of the field, it really shifted the odds because John Rahm was, you know, the same amount of favorite that he's been at these events over the last couple of weeks. Like, before he dropped out, he was a plus 500 favorite, which in men's golf, I mean, that is very, very short to have a guy at 5-1 mm-hmm. to win an event. And so we saw a huge odds boost, or I guess an odds negative boost. We saw Morikawa go to 7-1, Xander 9-1, JT 10-1, you know, and I guess it is interesting, you know. Of course, the U.S. is good at golf, and we are good at a lot of sports, and, you know, we're going to be favored to win the most medals at the Summer Olympics. But I guess I sort of think of golf as more of like a global game, We have guys who are very good from the United Kingdom. We have guys who are very good from Japan. We have, you know, they're Latin American golfers who are very good. So I just thought it was interesting that the three highest favorites, Morikawa, Xander, and JT, were all from the United States. And then we get into, you know, then it starts to split up a little bit more. Hideki at 11-1, Hovland at 12-1, Rory at 12-1. The odds, though, they seem strange to me, just because, you know, there is like no win equity at the bottom of the pool, because every country has as a max of how many guys, you know, if we just let all of the United Kingdom and all of the USA golfers in, then, you know, the Romain Langasque from France just would not have qualified for the Olympics based off of his official world golf rankings. But it's a 72 hole tournament, and the odds are just incredibly compressed, which I just found interesting.
Yeah, let's take a look at it one more time before we move on to basketball here. Morikawa is 7-1. Xander is 9-1. Justin Thomas, 10-1. Rory and Matsuyama, 11-1. And Victor Hovland is 12-1. So give me your when does this begin, by the way? When is this happening? I don't even know.
This starts Wednesday morning, your time. Okay. I think 6:50 in the morning, your time. On Wednesday morning, and then the men and the women each play 72 holes.
Gotcha. Okay, so tomorrow we'll have our final picks on that. Okay, now let's go over to basketball here for a minute, because this is definitely worth talking about. USA loses game one to France. If you were paying attention to anything at all this weekend, you saw this. And these updated odds, by the way, courtesy of DraftKings. We got USA at -220. The Aussies are about +625. Slovenia's 8.5-1. Spain is 9-1. And now France has popped in at 9-1 as well. So look, we've talked about this, Davis, a ton. And I still think the odds are showing you that the U.S. is going to win. But regardless, this is just a poor showing, man. Like, they played in their last six games, they're 3-3. Is that right? In the Olympics? Like, I mean, I don't know. You'll have to explain to me how this is happening.
I mean, there really is not an excuse for it. There just isn't, because you can say whatever you want about, oh, you know, the U.S. men, they played way more basketball than everyone else. They have, you know, they traveled, right? Middleton plays the entire NBA season and comes over for the finals. But you know what? It's not like Luka Doncic just didn't play a ton of games. It's not like members of the Australian team didn't play a ton of games. It's not like the Spanish national team didn't play a ton of games. So I don't really think that is like a legitimate excuse for the U.S. men's team at this point. You know, I think probably part of it you could credit to that, and the fact that so many of the U.S. men, you know, we're playing this really long season. But I also think you can just kind of point to the fact that this is not a very organized group of guys at this point, right? Like, they haven't really practiced. They maybe feel as if I have not been a Coach K guy for a long time. And I feel like, I mean, it's hard to mess up the U.S. men's basketball job, right? Like, you roll the ball out and you say, you know, okay, like Kobe, LeBron, Durant, Curry, like, go do your thing. Like, I don't feel like it's a very difficult job. And so if the player quality slips just a little bit, you know, that makes Coach K's job just a little bit harder. But I don't really have a good answer for why the men's team is not playing well. Like, I don't really know what the deal is. And it is, I mean, anytime you're giving up 28 points to Evan Fournier, it's probably not a good deal. Now, again, to be fair, this was the starting five for France. Gershon Yabusele, NBA player. Nicolas Batum, NBA player. Rudy Gobert, defensive player of the year. Evan Fournier, decent sixth man. And then Nando DeColo, who was an NBA player for a long time. But then think about the U.S. starters. Danny Green, Bam Adebayo, Zach LaVine, Damian Lillard, Kevin Durant. I mean, how many all-NBA selections are there? Like, at a certain point, you just have to say these guys are not playing well enough. Like, it's not that they're tired. It's not that the coaching is well. Like, you kind of got to put it on the players, I think.
Is there any opportunity here to bet another team? I know we talked about this last week, but we're not going to lay 220 on the U.S., I don't think. So is there any other dart throw here from any of the other squads?
I mean, if I was going to throw a dart, I feel like I didn't really realize how deep the French team was in terms of NBA players. And I guess if there was a team overall that that felt like it was primed to take advantage of the U.S. men not playing well, I guess you would have to say that it would be Australia, who has full NBA roster. Aaron Baines, Joe Ingles, Matisse Thybulle, Matthew Dellavedova, Patty Mills. I mean, they have a deep NBA roster. The problem with taking a stab on any of these teams is you just feel like the USA gets in a must-win situation and Kevin Durant is just grim reapering all over you. Like, maybe this is just not a bettable market. Maybe I think that's probably my conclusion, is the U.S. feels unbettable given their instability, but the threat of the U.S. men just deciding to turn it on effectively means that that it's just not a bettable market.
And how was the skateboarding over the weekend? Let's end with that, because I know that that was what we talked about last week. Any of those long shots come in?
We got close. One of the guys we bet at 22-1 was actually in first place after the preliminaries heading into the finals. But it's an odd format where your score from your preliminary rounds doesn't count for the finals. So it's kind of like a fresh slate. And the way it's scored is it's kind of just like if you fall on something that you didn't fall on in the prelims, your score doesn't. It's the format is a little odd, and I think that they can rework it in the future. But it was enjoyable to see it on TV. It was cool to see reactions, you know, people on my Twitter timeline and stuff who have never seen skateboarding before. A Brazilian 14-year-old girl got second place in the women's division. The women's division actually was really, even maybe a little bit more interesting than the men's, because I didn't know any of the participants. And like, there were these all three of the medalists were teenagers, two Japanese teenagers and one Brazilian teenager, like young girls. And it was just really cool to see these like young, small teenage girls just like really going for it. It was pretty wild.
Cool. All right. Well, that will recap us here on the Olympics. Coming up next, we've got an NBA draft to talk about, and FanDuel's got odds on virtually every single position coming up on Thursday night. That's when the NBA draft is. We'll preview it throughout the week. And coming up next, we'll talk about a few players who could potentially go in the first round. But what if they don't? Because this is always the key to a successful NBA draft wagering strategy. If they don't go early in the first, sometimes they fall out completely. We'll be right back on Sports Grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to the NBA Draft coming up this Thursday. You can go back and watch some of our previews from last week on demand as we go through all of the potential picks in the 2021 NBA Draft. Thursday night, we will preview it here on Thursday, no doubt. But some parts of this draft are very interesting because they don't include the top five players. And although we will hear from Cade Cunningham and Moody on the shows upcoming this week, I thought it would be a good exercise, Davis and I and Brett Levy, to go through some of the later picks potentially in the first round. So let's go ahead and get started with that. And these are players, again, the volatility in an NBA draft at the end of the first round is wild. Some of these guys don't even get drafted at all in the second round. So we'll start off with LSU's Cameron Thomas, 6'4", shooting guard, 19 years old. He averaged 23 points a game, 3 rebounds, 1.4 assists per game, and he is 12-1 right now to be a top 10 pick in the NBA draft. So that sort of tells the story there. Probably not going to happen. But Davis, the total here is what's interesting. because he is listed at 24.5 on FanDuel. So lots of volatility for me once you get past the first 10 picks. I've seen this for many years. I'm sure you have as well. We think a guy is going to go in the first round, and then at the end of the second, it's like, what happened? This guy didn't get drafted at all. I've seen it way too many times, and it's got to be rough on the kids too. But I'm looking at 24.5 on FanDuel. Let's start off with you, Cameron Thomas. Does he go under or over that?
This one does kind of look like an under to me, because I would think that if he was a little bit taller, a little bit heavier, he could potentially be viewed as a 3-and-D guy. But really, his only fit is going to be as an off-the-ball guard. And as an off-the-ball guard, he's okay, but not like a great shooter. I guess he was willing to shoot in college, which you like to see. He shot 7.2 three-point attempts per game, only shot 32% from college three. You'd be wanting him to be a little bit better at that. I see no chance that he goes top 10. He actually, now in the modern NBA, he is a quintessential second-round pick, where you take a guy who was willing to shoot threes in college, hope that you're able to get him into your team, and then teach him how to shoot three-pointers. Like, you get him with your shooting coach, and you say, all right, you need to do this here for him, you need to do this. So I you know, just kind of like a volume score, doesn't really do anything else. I would bet the under here, and I don't like the top 10 pick odds for him.
All right, Brett. And look, any kid, of course, from the Southeastern Conference I have my eye on. What do you have your eye on Thursday night with him?
Yeah, I'm definitely going under the 24.5 cred. It's juiced a little bit, minus 124. But Cameron Thomas, we mentioned James Bouknight last week. I said he was a top, you know, 3-5 scorer in this draft. Cameron Thomas is the scorer in this draft. The problem is he doesn't do much else for your basketball team. He puts the ball through the hoop, and that's his role. So this was a guy that lit it up while playing at Oak Hill Academy. He lit it up on the AAU circuit, the Nike EYBL. And then he came to the SEC, averaged over 20 points per game. This guy has scored everywhere he has been. He's going to score at the NBA. A team is just going to fall in love with that, especially an early one of these lower-seeded playoff teams who's looking to add some playoff scoring, a guy that can get you a bucket down the stretch in games. So I think under 24.5, I feel really good about that one.
All right, so that's our first one. Let's go back to the SEC and check in on the Auburn Tigers. We have Sharif Cooper. He is 6'1", a point guard. He's 20 years old. And what a season he had last year. 20 points per game, 4 rebounds, and 8 assists. Of course, his odds are significantly better to go into the top 8. He's plus 650. We just talked 12-1. You can get 6.5-1 here. And Davis' draft position is 20.5. So I feel better about the possibility of Cooper going in the first round. But when you look at this 20.5, are you thinking it goes under or over this total?
Just another guy whose profile is, I'm like, man, I cannot imagine being the team picking this guy high in the draft. He shot 22% from three-point range in college. Now, he was taking a lot of bad shots. Like, he was getting a ton of shots up for Auburn. He was playing 33 minutes a night, shooting almost 16 times per game. But he's a smaller point guard, 6'1", 180 pounds. Now, he's very quick. He is a great dribbler. The problem is I kind of view him as like an Emmanuel Mudiay-style player, where it's like, great, you can dribble, you can get to anywhere you want on the court, you can pass the ball to your teammates, but what are you going to do to get the ball in the basket? And if you're going to have the ball in your hands that much, you need to be scoring more efficiently than you are. The teams I could see taking shots on him would be like, well, that's, you know, kind of a prototypical Knicks-style guy, a guy who can't shoot but who can dribble a ton. Maybe the Wizards want a backup point guard so they don't have to rely on someone like Ish Smith. But I think probably this is a guy who, again, once you get outside the top 15 picks, you want to take projects that turn into something that you can really like. I don't see the project thesis for Sharif Cooper. Like, I think at best, he's like a backup point guard on like a 52-win team. So I think probably the under here fits for him better.
Okay. Davis, I look at Cooper, and when I see a player like this in the SEC, it always makes me think, you know, someone is undervaluing this player. But Brett, as I turn it over to you, there is a chance he goes into the top 10 because the odds are telling me that. It's unlikely. But if he doesn't go in the top 10, boy, this is a huge difference in terms of a total, because 20 and a half is what FanDuel has. So do you agree with Davis or do you feel differently about him?
Yeah, he's a little bit of a mystery, Craig. He missed some time at Auburn with some injuries and then some eligibility stuff. But he came in with a high profile of a big-time scoring guard. He still averaged 20 points per game in the SEC. Like Davis mentioned, he didn't shoot it particularly well, which I think disappointed some people. But I think he passed it better than people thought. So this one's a little bit of a mystery for me, to be honest. I don't really know what teams think of Sharif Cooper. I don't even know really what I think of Sharif Cooper. He had some games at Auburn where he was the best player on the court, and he had some games where he cost his team down the stretch. So, you know, it's a wide range of outcomes for this one. I wouldn't bet it, but he's obviously a big prospect in this draft and someone that people watching are going to be interested in and interested to see where he lands. And again, another former five-star recruit, averaged 20 points and 8 assists in the SEC. So we know he can play. We'll just see where he ends up and who takes the rolls the dice on the 6'1 point guard.
All right, so let's move on and go to the Pac-12 here for a minute, because I think we have another opportunity here of a little bit of a wild card player, and that is Zaire Williams of Stanford, 6'9", 19-year-old, who averaged only 10 points last year, 4 rebounds, 2 assists per game. In the top 10, you can get basically $440 back on your $100 bet on FanDuel. And Davis, I'm looking at a total of 18.5. Now, I know that you don't like the big men in the top 10, so I'm going to guess that you got him outside the top 10 there. But what do you think about his 18.5 total?
So actually, this is the type of guy you could talk me into, because he's a quote-unquote big guy, but he's not a big guy really. Like, he's not a center. He is not, right. Not even really a power forward. I mean, he shot 4 three-point attempts per game. Now, granted, he only made 29% of them, but even the willingness to take them at that height makes me more interested. And this is actually the guy that you take a stab on, because you can totally see the Oklahoma City Thunder, the Houston Rockets, the Memphis Grizzlies talking themselves in to a project player like this, where, okay, he's got the size, he can move the ball a little bit, he can rebound, we see a good defensive player there. I think if I was going to take stabs on guys to go top 10, top 15 under their draft slot, it's totally guys like this that project as 3-and-D guys at the NBA. So I actually do think you can take a stab at plus 440 and an under 18.5 on Zaire Williams.
Very interesting. Brett, I mean, I don't recall anyone going in the top 5 or 6 only averaging 10 points per game, but I suppose I haven't paid close enough attention to know if that is the case. That would be wild for me if that was. What do you think about his odds on FanDuel?
I think Zaire Williams is an interesting prospect. He played at Sierra Canyon High School, which obviously now made famous because Bronny James goes there, mm-hmm. LeBron's son. And he's had the opportunity to work out with NBA All-Stars like Dwayne Wade, like LeBron James, and work out with these guys in the offseason. He went to Stanford with a lot of hype. Stanford stormed into the season at the start. They climbed all the way up to like 20 in the top 25, and then they kind of stumbled the rest of the way. I'm not really sure what happened there. Maybe it had to do with Zaire Williams' play a little bit, but we were hoping to see a little more out of him in college. I think Davis is right. This is a kid that clearly can shoot the three, defends, plays really good CAI-level competitive basketball at Sierra Canyon and on the EYBL, and then now at Stanford. So he's never hid from competition, and you kind of like that about this guy. So we'll see what happens. I'm not betting him at 18.5. I think that's like right around the range he goes. The beginning of these playoff teams picking are going to take a shot at a 6'9 kid who shoots and defends.
All right, very interesting. Three players that we'll be watching on Thursday night for sure. Cade Cunningham, as a matter of fact, met with the Detroit Pistons a couple of days ago, And Moody also met with them, I believe, as well as Houston. And they did speak to the media. So over the next couple of days, we'll play that back for you and give you some updates on where they stand, how they feel, where they think they may go. All right, coming up next, it's time for us to get back to baseball. The trade deadline is coming up on Friday. And boy, Davis' Toronto Blue Jays have just kind of fallen out a little bit. Can they get back in it tonight in Boston? We'll find out next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It is the calm before the storm in baseball, no question. We're going to see a lot of trades starting to percolate. My guess is tomorrow. On that front, all the way through Friday at 5 o'clock Eastern, that is the trade deadline this year, the 30th of July, not the 31st. So teams are going to be very busy, and the games right now are not normal games in July. Every game means a lot because teams are trying to decide if they want to stay in or out. Your fantasy team could look completely different next week, especially in an AL-only or NL-only, that is for sure. I know I had to make a bunch of moves yesterday. But look, Davis, this is just a very important week, and we'll start off by saying it's a very important week for the team that we both like, the Toronto Blue Jays. But man, the timing pretty awful, Davis. They just had a brutal weekend of games. And now I would guess, I don't know if you agree with this, I would guess with them going to Boston for three games this week, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, I mean, what do you think? They probably have to sweep to make trades, right? Like, how can they consider themselves buyers right now?
Yeah, I mean, they absolutely have to get the sweep. Now, there is, so let's say they even get a split or whatever, or even let's say they get through this and they're 10 games back at the deadline. There's still a story they could tell themselves because they definitely feel that they are better than Cleveland. And they might feel that if they buy, they can make up the 4.5 games on the Athletics. And I think that the Mariners are like a fun story right now. But I don't know if we think that I don't know if they would believe or that you or I would believe that the Mariners' success that they've had recently is super sustainable. So there's a story they could tell themselves that the actual team that they are competing against is the Yankees and the Rays for the first and the second wild cards, because it's not going to come from the AL Central. And right now they are, if my math is correct, they are 4.5 games back of the Athletics. And certainly that is more make-upable than the 10 game lead that the Boston Red Sox have. So I think they would love to get out of this with a sweep. Like they would definitely buy if that was the case. But also, I wonder how you feel about this for baseball. Certainly in basketball, we know you can send your team a big message by buying or adding a veteran at the deadline. And I feel like with Biggio and Bichette and Vlad and all of these, Hernandez, all these really young, exciting players, I feel like it's kind of sending the wrong message to those young guys to not try and do something. Like, you want those guys playing competitive baseball in September. You want those guys giving it their all every step of the way. And I do feel like it would be a tactical mistake to not give those guys some more incentive and motivation.
Maybe they'll try. Maybe they'll try and do something, but the players sent the message, Davis, this past weekend that they're not good enough. I mean, they did not look like a good team this weekend, but that could change. And look, if they take 2 out of 3 from Boston, I would agree with you. But if they get whacked this week too, I can't see them doing anything significantly. At least they do have head-to-head games against the Rays left. Like, that's a pretty big thing as they move forward. And Boston, who they play tonight. So let's look at the odds. Nick Pivetta is going to pitch for Boston. We know he's not very good. But Thomas Hatch is very much an unknown for the Jays. They're just throwing anything they can at the pot at this point. The total is 10.5. And the odds on FanDuel, Davis, will tell you that this is an absolute coin flip game because you can't trust Pivetta and you don't know what Hatch is going to be. So any thoughts on this one tonight?
I mean, I would love to take the Blue Jays. I love this team. I've been wrong about the Red Sox this entire way. Just feels like Pivetta is due for a real blow up. I mean, I feel like I literally probably said that on this show about 17 times, about every time we've ever talked about a Nick Pivetta start. Hatch looks like your most banging average starting pitcher that you're going to find. His steamer projection, 7.81 Ks per nine, 4.91 ERA. You know, he doesn't walk a ton of guys, doesn't strike out a ton of guys, doesn't give up a ton of home runs in his minor league numbers. Like, he really does just look like the most average, you know, number four starter that you're going to find. The Blue Jays should definitely be giving less starts to guys like Thomas Hatch if they want to be competitive. It'll all be about the offense in this one. But I'll take the Blue Jays just because I want them to. I would like for it to be the Blue Jays. So that's the direction I'm going.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, let's look at Washington and Philadelphia. There are a lot of reports that Washington is ready to pack it in, which definitely is not a good sign for them going into this week. But we have no clue what Spencer Howard is going to look like from Philadelphia because he did not look good in the big leagues yet. And the line tells you that tonight on FanDuel. Another coin flip game. Philadelphia is minus 120 on the money line. You can get a little bit of plus money on Washington, but not much. And the total tells another story. 9.5 going into tonight's game. The Phillies had a rough weekend as well. They ended up winning on Sunday, mostly thanks to Ronald Torres, the former Yankee who is now basically playing every single day for the Philadelphia Phillies. Joe Girardi says he's still an everyday player. He just doesn't know where he's going to play.
Right now I'm probably going to play him in a lot of different places. You know, he's going to play, you know, some third. I know Gene's going to need a day off here somewhere. He's going to play some short. I'm just going to keep him going because he's playing so well.
Davis, we all before the season thought that Ronald Torres would be better than Alec Bohm, right? Just ask my fantasy teams at this point how that's working out. But Torres has starred for them. The Phillies, I definitely think, are in the market for a trade. And I think the Nationals are done. I think that's it. I think you put a fork in them. They had a rough weekend as well. It doesn't look like Strasburg is coming back anytime soon. Now, all of a sudden, we're hearing some reports that Max Scherzer may be willing to accept the trade. Remember, he's a 10-5 guy. He's been in the league 10 years and five with the same team. He can deny any trade he wants. We're hearing, maybe there's a trade kicker involved, gets a little bit of extra cash. That tells me Washington is ready to pack it in for the season, and they don't see that same magic from 2019. So I'm hesitant to take Washington at all this week.
No, I am definitely off of Washington. I definitely think it just feels like Max Scherzer should be traded. Like, why does he want to spend the twilight of his best pitching years, or like his final really good pitching years, pitching for a losing team? Like, I want to see him. I mean, maybe you want to trade him out to the American League. You know, maybe you trade him to I would love for the Angels to trade for him. I mean, I know the Angels are done, but I would just really wish the Angels were better. Craig, I just really wish the Angels were better. But how about the freaking Toronto Blue Jays trade for Max Scherzer? I mean, that how bad do they need someone like Max Scherzer? Even Boston. If Boston can win 100 games in the regular season, but they'll be underdogs against any team they face in the American League playoffs because their pitching is so bad. They need someone like Scherzer. So I'm with you. The Nationals are done. I do not think they can make up the 8 games. Whereas on the other side, I feel like the Phillies have to be feeling incredible. I mean, they know their only way to the playoffs is winning the division. The National League wildcard race is completely done before the trade deadline has even got there. It's done and dusted. And the Mets, of all the division leaders, like the Mets look like the most fragile division leaders in baseball. I mean, they are a couple injuries away from being, you know, like, I don't even think the Mets are that good. I know they've gotten some good pitching this year. So I'm on the Phillies tonight, and we should maybe take a look at the Phillies division odds, because I feel like they might be a little bit underpriced right now.
I think they are. I think that they are a bullpen piece away from winning the division, but they're going to have to make those moves for sure. Okay, finally, this is a very big series that we did not think we would be talking about in July, because the Seattle Mariners, somehow with a negative run differential, have jumped right into the picture in terms of the wild card. They're right behind Oakland. they got a chance at home this week to get closer even to Houston. And look, Houston has won the division the last few years. Not last year, but before that. But Houston has tended to shut it down in years past in the second half just to kind of get in the postseason. They're huge favorites tonight, though. Minus 184 on the money line. You can get plus 150 on your money with the hot Mariners. The total is 8.5. But here is the issue. Luis Garcia starts for Houston, and he's pretty good. And I don't know a thing about Darren McGaughan, who pitches tonight for Seattle. I honestly don't even know how Seattle is in this point. I went and looked at their numbers over the weekend, Davis, and I was like, oh, somebody must be doing really well. Yeah, Ty France, he's doing okay. Oh, Haniger, he's doing okay. But they really don't have anything. I don't even know how they're accomplishing what they are. Dusty Baker, the manager of the Astros, very well aware of what Seattle is doing and says his team better be prepared for what will be their hardest week of the season.
We have to rise to the occasion. It's just something that you look on the schedule and you see that, okay, this is going to be a tough stretch here with some very good teams. Like I said, Seattle playing outstanding. You know, they're as tough in their stadium as we are in ours. I think we have almost the identical record at home. So, you know, they've always, you know, been tough there, especially the last couple of years. They were tough on us last year there. So, yeah, it's a big week here, you know, huge week. And then at the end of this, hopefully a successful West Coast swing, then we get back home at 6:30 in the morning and play the Twins. So this is not only on the, you know, tough stretch on who we're playing, where we're playing on the coast, but also, you know, getting back in that late. So I'm going to have to sort of space some of the guys out to make sure that they're still relatively strong.
And the reason why I wanted to use that, Davis, at the end is because when you're betting on the Astros this week, Dusty Baker is usually pretty forthright. So he just basically told you, look at the lineups before you do anything throughout the week, because he is notorious for doing this too, of sitting the hitters as time goes on. Alex Bregman is expected back tonight for Houston at Seattle. Davis, at some point, we're going to have to start looking at Seattle as a potential, like, one of these team of destinies. I do think Oakland is better. And I do think Houston is better, and I think Tampa Bay is better, and I guess at this point we have to say Boston is better. But Seattle is playing as well as anybody in baseball. I can't figure it out. Can you?
I mean, my guess would be with the Mariners. It's just got to be – it has to be like luck in one-run games. I can't – I imagine that, you know, if we get to the end of the season – and someone does an analysis on the Mariners winning like 88 games or whatever, and they're like, how on earth did this happen? You remember that year the Orioles made the playoffs when they stunk out loud and they went like, that Orioles team, if I remember correctly, I think they went like 32-4 or something like that in one run games. Like it was the, like, which over large enough numbers, you were going to get absurd distributions like that. My guess would be is that that is what we're seeing with the Mariners. You know, it's just hitting really well with runners in scoring position, getting really lucky with runners in scoring position with their relief pitching, you know, some you know, outs made at 327 feet right at the fence and things like that, because no one's buying this. And not one person. There are people in Seattle who are not buying this. Kyle Seager is sitting there texting his mates like, I have no idea how we keep winning these games. We suck. Like no one is buying this. So I think the right bet here would probably just be the run line. I looked up McConaughey's stuff. He looks very similar to Hatch, who we just talked about 5 minutes ago. Just your most bang average, 4.5 ERA, low strikeout, high walk guy. Like, just not anyone who's super interesting.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens tonight. A light schedule, both in DFS and betting. Doubleheader, by the way. The Mets have a key one coming up tonight. 5:10 Eastern is their first game. The Raz Bowl is underway, and our friend from Raz Ball, the Donkey Teeth, is going to join us a little bit later in the show to give us a preview of what Raz Bowl is and exactly how people get involved in it. And by the way, for those of you listening and watching, how you can get involved in it coming up next year. But the first round is underway, and three people on this show, me, Davis, and Brett Levy, all are making our first round picks. So when we come back, we'll tell you what we did when we return next year on Fantasy Sports Today. Stay on the grid. Don't go away.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The Sports Grid Network.
My first fantasy football draft of the season is the Raz Bowl, which we're going to recap the first two rounds on tomorrow's show. It just got underway about an hour ago. So we do have seven picks in the books. And Davis, I'm going to run through them real quick. And you give me your thoughts. Dalvin Cook went first overall. You had the second pick and took Christian McCaffrey, followed by Alvin Kamara. Travis Kelce went fourth overall. I definitely want to hear your opinion on that. I see where he was ranked here on this, but I want to get your opinion there. Derrick Henry goes fifth. Brett Levy, our producer, he takes Tyreek Hill sixth. Stephon Diggs goes seventh. And now the eighth pick is on the board. I pick ninth. So maybe by the end of the show, I'll have my first selection. What are your thoughts here on the first seven selections in the draft that all three of us are a part of?
Well, I set my KDS, my Kentucky Derby rankings, to get the second overall pick. I saw that our friend Donkey Teeth is going to be on the show a little bit later. He tweeted out, okay, we're about to run KDS in 20 minutes. Go do your thing. And I set mine up so that I would get the second pick because I knew a lot of people in our division would not have set theirs. Like, I bet you and Brett probably did not set yours.
Did not.
Yeah, no. Which is okay. I don't think anyone did because it was done on a really short time frame. So I was like, okay, sweet, I'll get Dalvin Cook, and then I can just take a bunch of wide receivers. I did not think that I would be getting Christian McCaffrey with the second overall pick. That was just a nice little gift. I think the first round went pretty well. You know, I don't have a problem with anything that anyone did. I think Kelce is such a huge advantage posting, you know, wide receiver one scores at your tight end spot. I think Brett did the right thing taking Tyreek. So I think we haven't seen any big surprises yet. I'm very curious. I'm very excited to watch your draft as it unfolds.
Yeah, I'm not very excited to see myself draft, but I am excited to talk about what we do here because this is, I mean, we have discussed so much fantasy that I feel like I am somewhat prepared for it, but there's nothing worse than me being involved in a July draft and then having to pay attention to training camp of guys getting hurt and things happening. Nothing drives me more nuts than that. All right, coming up at the top of the hour, Chris Kofsky, he's got the update. We will be back in just a couple of minutes. As I mentioned, the Raz Bowl is underway. What is it? What does it entail? How did it get started? We're going to have a preview of that a little bit later in the show. So stay on the grid. We'll be right back for hour two.